Good morning. 6:31 a.m. April 18th, Wednesday. Yes, I'm out early today. I've got a lot of stuff to do between now and 9 o'clock. So rather than take a chance that I miss getting my walk in this morning, I figured I'd do it early. I left around just a little after 6 o'clock. I'll be home just around 7. So we'll be in time to make sure everybody's up and moving and get breakfast underway, get this thing posted. It'll give me a few minutes to think about what's going to happen next. And one thing that has to happen today is I've got to mow a back lawn, the front lawn. Back lawn is still buried in lumber, but the front lawn, I need to get cleaned up. I'm looking forward to doing that late morning, maybe around lunchtime. It shouldn't be too hot yet. It's only supposed to be in the 50s or 60s today, so give a chance for the dew to wear off and for me to do some editing. Yes, editing. Yesterday, for the first time in, maybe weeks, I had the house to myself. So I could record, and I did. I re-recorded from the beginning Illimitable Domain for Tales to Terrify, I guess is where it's going. Wow, what a tough read. Honest to Pete. I think it's about 9,000, 10,000 words, and that works out to be about an hour finished. But I swear it's two and a half hours worth of file, and it's going to take me 4 or 5 hours to edit it down so I can get it off my plate. But that's the deal for the day. That's what I got to do today. And I can't sit and do that for 5 hours. So I'm planning on where I'm going to take my breaks, what I'm going to do with my breaks, and how I'm going to fit this all in between runs to school and fixing meals. So yeah, yesterday I was thinking about and talking about how the universe works. Apparently 6:30 is not too early. I've been thinking about how this universe works some more. And Natalia Ruggieri is becoming more and more of an interesting character. And I think we're going to see more of, in fact, I know we're going to see more of her. I'm pretty sure we're going to see her in Odin's Outpost. Because that would be the logical place for her to show up. And then I still need to put the first half on Xyphiria's Call, but that's a different universe. I'm thinking about how Ishmael Huang makes a transition from Starship Captain to wherever he's going to go. I don't suppose it's too much of a stretch. I'm not going to say anything. I might have created spoilerage, but I'm trying to figure out. He's going to be something else. Not necessarily going to be a Starship Captain, although I'm not going to rule that out. He might be an owner. He might not. He's got enough money now. He can do pretty much what he wants, including kick back and put his feet up. What he's going to do now first is go back to Port Numar and work with Sifu Numar and his Tai Chi. We've established pretty well that Numar, if she's still alive, sees her old students regularly. And no, he's not going to become the new Sifu Numar. She's got another half a century left to her, I think. She's very old to begin with, but in the scheme of things that we're talking about, very old is quite relative. And Ishmael is really quite young. So we'll see. But yeah, this idea of, I remember having a long discussion with Nabilis about, you know, what if they discovered aliens? It's like, you know, that's okay, great. Why? Why would we include aliens? What kind of stories do I need to tell that would require an alien? I don't know. That's an interesting one, but I don't. You know, I'm not seeing it. I'm not. See, the problem with aliens is that there has to be a reason for them to be aliens. It has to be something we want to explore, other than the fact that they're aliens. They look funny. Okay, woohoo. They need to serve this story. Or they need to be the story. They need to be something that we can explore that gives some insight into the human condition, into what it means to be people, to be humans. Star Trek didn't do this very well. And Star Wars is... no. But you look at stuff like Werner Vinge's Pups, Children of the Sky, Fire Upon the Deep, the idea of a collective intelligence that through telepathic link allows groups to form together to form larger consciousnesses, higher levels of intelligence, so that a single unit can cope with basically hygiene, feed themselves, but you get a couple or three of them together and they can do things like maybe hunt or farm. And you get five or six of them together and they can write novels or books or read or I don't know. And that's this idea of so what do we discover about intelligence in terms of what it means to be intelligent. And that's what those beings explore. See, the interesting question is why... Yeah, it is unusual, I suppose, that we would be that far out into the stars and not find any aliens. The other side of the coin is we don't know that we haven't found any aliens. All we know is that the general populace doesn't think we've found any aliens. And the starship people, well, we really don't know, do we? All we know is what Ishmael's seen. And Ishmael hasn't seen any aliens. Ishmael hasn't heard any talk of any aliens. They haven't found any ancient relics on any of these old terraformed planets. And the other side of that is, well, maybe they have and didn't say anything. Or the Confederate Planets Joint Committee on Exploration didn't see fit to let anybody know. So it's this idea that we know what's going on in the universe is really important because we don't. It's a lot like the average person in the world today. Pick your place in the world. Some are pretty well informed, some are pretty not informed, and some are sort of half informed. And most people are fine about the things that matter to them directly. What do I need to do to make a living? What do I need to do to keep a roof over my head? What do I need to do to keep my kids safe? That's where things go. There's some interesting problems with that, of course, is that what I need to do to make my kids safe is not a fact. It's actually an opinion. Because there's some things that we can generally agree on. Getting regular medical care. Yeah, okay. Food, yeah. Water, okay. Shelter, yes, that would be good. Your basic security needs, Okay. We have some affection needs. All right, we can cope with those. But how do we deal with safety? Where does safety? Safety and security go together. How do we keep kids safe? How do we keep them safe? Not just today, but how do we help them become safe tomorrow? Because that's really what we're talking about, isn't it? That's what education is all about, is how to make kids safe tomorrow. How to make it so that in the future they can address their own security needs, which then lays the platform for them to deal with affection, affiliation, and all the rest. Those kinds of drives. Are they needs? Are they really needs? Do I need to be affiliated? Do I need to have affection? Do I need to have self-actualizations at the top? Which one am I missing? My Maslow fails me. My Maslow foo is weak this morning. The idea of aliens in fiction. Why do we have aliens? How can we deal with aliens? And why do we put aliens in the book? And I don't really have any good reason to put aliens in the book, because people are strange enough and I don't know enough about people. Dan Sawyer did a review of the whole Cher series over on Literary Abominations. You've probably seen it. You can Google it, you'll find it, I'm sure. He was very complimentary. But it was also very gratifying because one of the problems that I have is that this idea that I don't really know how other people work. I don't know how other people are. Does that make sense? It's like, I know how I am. And I know how I've observed some other people to be. But is that really what other people are like? Because everything is through this lens of what I think and what I know. And so I think of this quite frequently when I think about an instance of body language. Everybody's convinced that they can understand body language. It's one of the big myths. It's like, everybody knows, oh, well, I can see it on your face. No, what you see on my face is indigestion. It just happens to result in a grimace that looks like disgust. That's because I've got a bubble stuck underneath my rib cage and it hurts, and I grimace. I ran into this first with my great aunt Dorothy. Auntie Dodd. Wonderful woman. Strange, it's all get up. Wonderful woman. This is my grandmother's sister. Grandmother's sister? Grandfather's sister, I think. I don't know, there's so many of them. It's 11 in one side and 10 on the other in the great level. So my grandfather had either 9 or 10 siblings, and my grandmother had either 10 or 11 siblings. So that generation was huge in terms of aunts and uncles, and well, actually, great aunts and great uncles. But that's beside the point. Anyway, great Aunt Dot, Auntie Dot. I would go and spend a few days every summer with her on the coast. They had a little plot on Flying Point outside of Brunswick. And this thing is probably worth several million right now because it straddled the point and there was beachfront on both sides of it. Well, it's beach on one side and rock on the other. But it was an amazing place and it was wonderful to go and stay by myself there, walk on the rocks, look at the ocean, think. But she had this thing where she tried to open a jar of like pickles or something, and she had to, you know, get a good grip on it and really strain to get it. And a lot of people will kind of bare their teeth and grimace. And for her, it looked like a smile. It was the exact same expression as her smile. So whenever she did this grimace thing, I was never quite sure because I thought she was smiling at me, so I'd smile back. And then she'd stop smiling because the pickle jar would open. I was like, what the hell is that? I was, 8, 9, something like that. It was very strange. It was a very strange thing. Later on, very recently, I was sitting in a meeting right underneath the air conditioning duct. I think I've told this story before. And as the meeting went on, I got colder and colder. And I'm sitting there in a lightweight shirt, my shirt sleeves. And I'm trying to stay warm. I'm freezing. And finally, my boss, who's chairing this meeting, says, so what's the problem, Nate? I says, nothing. I think it's a good idea. Now, why are you all closed off? Why are you sitting there like that? Your legs are folded. Your arms are folded. You're scowling. There's obviously something wrong with this idea. You don't like this idea. Something. You know, what's going on? He said, I think the idea is fine. I think the problem is that I'm sitting under the air conditioning duct, and I'm freezing. And she looked up and realized that, yeah, I was. And she said, oh, all this time I've been seeing you sit there, become more and more closed off, and you're just cold. I said, yeah. She says, well. So this idea that you can read body language, this idea that you can see it on your face, this idea that people can read people, I don't think that's true. I mean, I to a certain extent, there's certain things you see. And you can see an expression, but the expression gets interpreted through your own filters, through what you see. And that, it really underscores a lesson that they were working on, that I was working on, and in Oregon last month, which was, when you're writing through the character's eyes, everything you see is through the character's eyes. And everything that goes onto the page gets filtered through the character's brain, even though, you don't necessarily understand. So it's an interesting challenge. Is how do you write real people? You don't really understand what they're thinking. You don't really know. And that goes back to the review, and Dan Sawyer said that he thought that the books were honest. And that was high praise. I liked that. That made me feel good, because that meant that I wrote something that was real enough that other people have picked up on the idea that he's been driven from pillar to post by his mother and all the women in his life. And he only ever does stuff as a reaction. He never acts on his own. All true. And in a certain sense, I think it describes how many people go through life. An interesting challenge here now is that now he's got this new Wilkie. He's got this bird, the seabird. And he can spread his own wings, and he can now go where he wants. And the question becomes, how does he do that? He spent 40 years not doing that. How does he make that adjustment? What does that adjustment look like? He's gone through a couple of different identity shifts over the course of the book, from land rat to spacer, from married to single to married to single again, from enlisted to officer to owner. So what does it look like? How does that change? What do we need to have happen, I wonder, to make this thing fly? Decisions. So that's what I'm thinking about today, anyway. Just kind of an odd ramble, but there it is. And yes, I've got to get this lawn mowed today. That'll be a good exercise later on. Right now, chirpy, chirpy birds, I'm at the back gate. Oh, I wonder if that froze. Anyway, tomorrow, I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day, and I'll talk to you then.